Welcome to Planetary Spirit, coming to you on ETIN, Emerson College's Talk and Information Network. My name is Jeff Ferranini, and I invite you on an exploration of spirituality. And my guest today is Randy Pizer, who is an author and also owns Author One Stop, a national publishing consulting firm that helps people write and publish books. She works with people in ghostwriting, publicity, finding agents, as well as publishers. And the website for that is www.authoronestop.com. She's also the author of a book entitled The Power of Miracle Thinking. And that has a website as well, which is www.miraclethinking.com. That's miraclethinking.com. So it is indeed a pleasure to welcome today to Planetary Spirit, Randy Pizer. Hey, Randy, how are you?
Excited to be here.
I'm glad to hear that. I'm excited to have you here. Now, I just wanted to start this off because the book is entitled The Power of Miracle Thinking. So there's a couple of things you say in your introduction, which are questions, and then you answer those questions. You say, what constitutes a miracle? And you say a miracle can be an unforeseen act, a prayed-for act, the creation of anything wonderful in your life that you really want, but are not sure is truly possible. And then you ask, what is miracle thinking? So let me ask you that question. What is miracle thinking?
I wanted to find out how we can help miracles happen in our lives. Are there certain things that we can do? So I was examining the attitudes, beliefs, and thoughts that people hold who seem to be lucky or seem to attract miracles. And so that's how I defined what miracle thinking is, are the kinds of thoughts and attitudes and beliefs that people held that contributed to their miracles happening.
Okay. And there's a quote I'm looking for, and I'm not quite seeing, that I really, really like. And so that's why I want to. It's the word mira. Oh, here it is. In Spanish, mira means to see. A miracle means to see something differently. Anything can become a miracle if we want to see it differently. And that's by Sandy Alamian. And I would like to, if we could, talk about her story. This is where she's in the neonatal intensive care, and she's expecting the birth of her second daughter, Talia. And can you talk a little bit about her story?
Sure. So when Talia was born, she wasn't expected to live. But Sandy Alamian, being the kind of mom who's just already a miracle thinker and a very positive, upbeat person, she thinks that she can help Talia to be the miracle baby, and she envisions herself with Talia going on Oprah to inspire other women that, yes, they too can keep their babies alive and look because it happened with Talia. However, that isn't what happened with Talia, and within a month, Talia died. And Sandy was beyond devastated, as any parent would be. However, shortly thereafter, Sandy started writing. She was just like writing stream of consciousness kinds of writing, and all of a sudden she hears mommy. And you know, she's startled, and then she's like, no, this isn't happening, and she's denying it. Until one day she goes to a park, and she's sitting in the park, and she overhears two women, and they're calling for a little girl who seems to be lost. And as they call her name is Talia. And so Sandy took that as a sign that her daughter was indeed very, very present in her life, and realized that her daughter is an angel. And she actually wrote a book called Congratulations, It's an Angel. And so that's a perfect example of what you were saying about turning around a perception and seeing the miracle in the experience.
Well, that's what I was kind of surprised in seeing here within the pages of this book, The Power of Miracle Thinking. You know, I think when we kind of chew on the word miracle, we're expecting the waters to part and, you know, for something extraordinary to take place, not that the hero or heroine dies. And that's kind of the way that we've conditioned to look at the world, that death is a bad thing and to be avoided at all costs. And what your stories, a couple of them, seem to say is you really need to look at the something that you're asking for in a new light, hold it in a new way, so that you can see the gift that is actually being given to you once the grief and the sadness moves out of the picture, or at least lessens in intensity.
And, you know, I think you really hit the nail on the head. And, you know, I believe that every death is a new beginning. And I'd like to explain that a little bit. Every time a relationship ends, for example, you know, one typical response is either relief or grief. And when there's grief at the end of a relationship or at the end of a job or at any ending, I say that sorrow digs the well and joy fills it. If you are willing to feel all the deep feelings that comprise grief, whether it's the anger, the sadness, the wailing, the sense of feeling lost, the sense of wanting to commit suicide even, it is a death that you are going through. It is an ending to what was. And once you go through it, there is a new beginning, always, always. Now, the trick is, how do you navigate the waters of sorrow and grief? And there's an expression called the dark night of the soul. Many people have heard of it. Some people haven't. They say, I'm going through the dark night of the soul, when that grief just seems so overwhelming. And I have a little joke about it. I say, why do they always call it a night when it's more like a year and a half? Can't we have a little truth here? And these are very, very difficult, painful experiences, the dark night of the soul experience, in which we are being transformed. But in the process, how you get through it, at least how I got through it at that point in my life where everything seemed to be stripped away, was I called it riding the waves. Sometimes the grief would be there and it would be so prevalent, and that's all there was grief, and there was no end to it and no end in sight. Then all of a sudden, there would be an ending to that phase of it. And then I'd realize, oh, it was a wave. And then those waves would come and go as they came and went. And there is no timetable on grief. It comes when it comes and it goes when it goes. And so I believe that true warriors of the soul are people who are willing to feel all the depths. Because if you can feel all the depths of sorrow, you are digging a well in which you can experience that much more joy later on.
Yeah, I think that's nicely put, that a lot of people think about the dark night of the soul as being one night, a short duration. And exactly what you said, when you're in it, it's endless. It feels like it will never end. And then all of a sudden, the light comes. And that in itself can be a miracle. When we just see something different, or how that transition comes about, perhaps we, our conscious mind, don't even fully grasp, but we are so grateful for when it does subside.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to share with you personally.
Oh.
Last year, I went through breast cancer.
Oh.
I went through chemo. I went through radiation. I almost died in August of 2012 from the chemo. I was in horrible shape.
Mm.
I was terrified. And I also know that we teach best what we need to learn. I had written a book on the power of miracle thinking because it was my lesson to learn more about miracles and how they happen. Now that, thank God, I'm on the other side of that experience and doing very well, knock on wood.
Mm-hmm. God bless, yeah.
Yes. I notice what are the gifts from that experience. I certainly didn't feel gifts while I was going through it.
Yeah, of course.
But now with more perspective. And I'll share with you, one of the major gifts for me was a couple of weeks ago, I was having yet another medical test to determine that I'm, you know, free and clear here.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God I am.
Amen.
But I was going into the office to get the results of the test, and I was very nervous, but I'm also a miracle thinker, so how am I going to hold this experience in my consciousness? What happened was, there was a song that came on the radio in the waiting room, and it was an old Donna Summer song from the, I guess, 70s or 80s, and it was, I'm every woman, I'm every woman. And I got up in the middle of this doctor's waiting room, and I danced full out to this song. And first the receptionist looked out, and then she started calling everybody from inside their cubicles, and everybody's looking, everybody's laughing, and I'm dancing full out, snapping my fingers, hands over my head, twirling and spinning. I never would have done something like that before.
Mm.
But the gift of the experience is that I celebrate every single day. And if I feel like dancing now, I will get up and dance.
Mm.
So I'm allowing myself to express myself instead of holding back like I might have wanted to do that. But I never would have done that in the past.
Mm.
I am not censoring myself.
Mm.
I am celebrating my life every day. And, you know, here I am dancing, and I said to, you know, the people in all the cubicles, I almost died last year from breast cancer. Now if I want to dance, I'm going to get up and dance. And everybody was, like, applauding, and it lightened everybody up, made everybody happy.
Sure, because they were able to see that once you come out on the other side, how you're now stronger. As they say, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
That's right, and it came close. But
yeah, yeah.
And I'm actually working on a new book now called Bald Courage.
Oh.
And that's to help people through the chemo journey, which is a very, very challenging experience.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. Well, normally we would take a break now, but since I have been remiss here with not getting here on time, we're just going to keep plowing right through. But I want people to know that my guest today is Randy Payzer, who is the author of The Power of Miracle Thinking, as well as, what, six other books, I think?
A number of other books.
From Crappy to Happy. I love that title.
Yeah, Crappy to Happy was actually featured in the movie Eat, Pray, Love.
Oh, okay.
Which was so funny. I didn't even know it was going to be in the movie. I'm sitting in a movie theater, opening night of Eat, Pray, Love with a circle of friends, and there's my book being held up in a scene with Julia Roberts.
Wow.
And so,
wow.
She was looking for a self-help book, and they hold it up because a title like Crappy to Happy gets a big laugh from the audience.
Absolutely.
And it was and the cover is very funny. It's got pigs on the cover, and so that was a hoot.
Well, let me also let people know that your websites are www.authoronestop.com, AUTHORONESTOP.com, and that's for ghostwriting, publicity, or finding agents or publishers. And your other website is www.miraclethinking.com. That's MiracleThinking.com. And of course, if you're enjoying this program and would like to access past interviews, go to the planetary-spirit.com website for on-demand archives of past shows. So I wanted to talk a little bit about some of these almost like, I don't want to use the word bullet points, so let's say star points that you talk about more often than not miracle thinkers have. Do you want me to read them, or would you like to just go down the list yourself?
Well, you're welcome to read them.
Okay.
That's fine.
I got them right here in front of me. Miracle thinkers make choices and take actions that continually lead to the cultivation of a miracle mindset. Miracle thinkers express themselves without censoring themselves out of the fear of being judged. They step into and live their truth. They choose to never withhold anything from anyone for any length of time. They take action that supports their growth. They make the phone calls and do the follow-ups. They let go of the victim stance. They step away from that which is not for their highest good. They say yes to life more often than they say no, and they move with the flow. Now, the one thing that I found really interesting in the different, I think there's like 10 or 6 or 10 different things you say at the end of the book, your author's conclusion. And the one that really got me was, the universe will never give you a yes, dot, 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 but. Talk about that, will you?
I'd love to. This is one of the principles that I discovered about all miracles, that whatever we want, if we're holding any objection, either consciously or subconsciously, to that thing that we say we want, we're creating a push-pull. And I want to give a demonstration of this. Some years ago, I really, really, really wanted a relationship. Universe, bring me a wonderful soulmate relationship. What am I absolutely terrified of? Getting my heart skewered and broken again because I've been betrayed in the past. Yes, I want it. No, don't give it to me. Yes, I, yes, no, yes. We're creating a push-pull. Yes, but. Mm-hmm. Yes, but. Yes, but. So in order for anything that we say we desire or want to come into our lives, there has to be congruence. There has to be a clear flow, just a yes with no but attached to it. So how do you get there? And the way that I suggest that you get there is to ask yourself a question that only you will answer for yourself. And the question is, what is it that I am truly willing to allow? What is it that I am truly willing to allow? So, for example, with the relationship, I said to myself, well, let's see, I'm willing to allow a phone conversation with a new person. I am willing to allow a dinner out with a new person. And so I just, you know, kept the steps very, very gentle. It was kind of like taking baby steps,
mm-hmm.
but there was all a flow of yes to these steps. These were things I was truly willing to allow.
Yeah, that's good advice, because a lot of people want to take the giant leap, and then they realize midair, they really don't want to land there.
That's a great way of putting it.
You know, but by taking the baby steps, you can feel into how you're doing with making that step forward.
Exactly. And then one door leads to the next, mm-hmm. leads to the next.
Mm-hmm. So I have to tell you, there were a couple of stories that actually towards the end of this book, I was weeping. And there were just a couple of stories that just really caught me off guard. But the one that really seemed to get me the most was The Heart of Moo, which is this story by Peggy Black. And you have a quote by most of the individuals whose story you're telling. And so Peggy's is, we live in a neutral field of energy. We sculpt it with our words and beliefs. Throughout the day, this neutral energy is waiting for our command. And that's by Peggy Black. Would you tell that story? Do you have that one in your memory?
I don't remember it well enough to tell it.
Oh, okay. So let me bring it forward, because this is such a beautiful story. Peggy Black, her daughter would not be able to have a child due to the presence of scar tissue in her uterus. So Peggy says, well, let me see what I can do to help. And her daughter is with her, and she's on a massage table. Peggy uses sacred sounds for healing, so she places her hands on her daughter's abdomen and chants tones into her belly. And then while Peggy toned over her daughter, she said they sensed a presence in the room. And at one point, her daughter reported that it even felt like her mother's hands were inside her body, providing both comfort and healing. So by the end of the week, the daughter had flown back to Hawaii, where she lived, and Peggy received miracle news. Her daughter calls and says, "Mom, I think you'd better sit down." They ran another ultrasound, and there's no scar tissue. The doctors did a second procedure and adjusted my hormones, and now my uterus is clear and healthy. Well, of course, both the daughter and the mother were ecstatic. So a few months later, there is a second miracle to report. Her daughter calls her and she says, "Mom, I'd like you to go outside and look at the most beautiful thing you can find." Peggy went out into her garden and looked at a huge array of blooming flowers that were growing there. Then the daughter said, "I want you to know that I'm pregnant." So now Peggy, of course, wants to be on hand for the birth and probably needs about $1,000 in order to do that. So she's making arrangements to go to Hawaii and everything and trusting that she could somehow raise this $1,000 she needs and doesn't really have any clue as to where this money's coming from. So she does this talk at a hospital. 30 people attend, and not one person books a session with her after the talk. So tears are rolling down Peggy's cheeks. She prays to God and says, "Here, I know that I'm here to serve you. Help me with, you know, whatever it is that you needed." She sees a gorgeous rainbow outside the window. The next morning, the phone rings. A woman from a local radio program heard about Peggy's talk and wanted her to come on the station. She goes on the station, and then this woman calls her from that radio interview and invites her to her home. And she said, "I still didn't know what the heart of Moo was, but I got covered with chills because as she opens the door to this woman's home, the host says, 'Welcome to the heart of Moo.'" So she said inside the home was a huge geodesic dome, which was referred to as the meditation chamber. After lunch, the women went to the meditation chamber where Peggy led them in a welcoming ritual to honor the birth of little Emily Sarah. Much of the ritual included the toning of sounds, and by the end of their sacred time together, two of the women had requested appointments with Peggy. So then Peggy does this healing on this woman who has said that she has had this challenge in her abdomen for a long, long time. Peggy sees that this is from a past life where in a past life she and this woman had actually been in relationship as healer and healee, and she had not been able to complete the healing. And so she then completes the healing. The woman puts some money in a basket and walks out. Peggy goes out of the room with the woman and thanks her for the session. When she comes back in, she sees that the woman has left $600 in the basket. So racing back outdoors, she tries to convince the woman she paid too much, and the woman replied, "First of all, it's probably not enough for what you just did. And second of all, that is what I was told you needed when I was in meditation this morning." I just blew my mind. You know, the power of people who are going forward on faith, and then the miracles are showing up.
Yes, you tell that story very well. I just couldn't remember all the intricate details of it, but that was great.
Oh, thanks.
Great summation.
Yeah, yeah. So is there a favorite story you have in the book?
There's a story about a woman, Christina Barron, and she and her boyfriend both lose their jobs. And they're, you know, looking like, you know, what do we do next with our lives? They're in that in-between transition place. And they decide to create a company. And the boyfriend used to work for Lucasfilms, and he would create these backdrop paintings that were often used, like, for example, in The Wizard of Oz, the whole backdrop of the,
right.
of Oz is that kind of painting. And so, and Christina, with her background in business, they figured between the two of them, they could create a company. So they call HBO, and they do this little job, and you know, like just a couple of paintings. And then they forget about it, and they're just kind of living day by day. Then about 9 months later, they start revisiting the idea, saying, why don't we really go for it? And so they call HBO, and this time HBO has a job where they need 50 of these matte paintings. And they ask Christina and her boyfriend, you know, can your company handle this very large assignment? And they're like, oh, yes, definitely. And the only thing they really have is the phone they're speaking on and their skills. And that's about it. And the HBO executive says, great, I'll be up in a week to see your studio. And so it's one of those moments of, you know, where truth just, where the rubber has to hit the road.
Mm.
And within a week, all of these miracles lined up. First, they were able to rent a warehouse for a month, which is almost unheard of. Who rents, like, warehouse, giant warehouse property for a month? So they were able to find a space. They were able to get the phone company to come in and put a phone line in. Now, since when does the phone company show up within 1 week of an order?
Mm-hmm.
So that was another miracle. They brought in cubicles. They rented potted plants. They rented file cabinets. There was no electricity in the space, so they glued metal faceplates, and they put all kinds of computers and all kinds of things attached to these faceplates. They asked every friend to invite every friend that they knew to come in and be their, quote-unquote, employees. They brought in all kinds of props. They trained everybody to look really, really busy. Then the day that the person was arriving, the HBO executive, they had also had arranged with one friend who would call in every 3 to 4 minutes to make it look like the phone is, it's a real happening place and that phone is ringing off the hook. Now, when the HBO executive arrived, they went out to lunch because they figured, let's take him out to lunch so we can keep him out of the building as much as possible. And they did as much of their meeting that they could handle in at the restaurant. And then my friend Christina said, then there was a well-placed comment about using the restrooms in the restaurant before they left, which was actually very necessary because there was no restroom in the warehouse.
Right.
And they had to put together some kind of like a slideshow PowerPoint display, but since they didn't have electricity, they were actually, a bike shop next door had allowed them to run a cord from his business through a wall to theirs so they could have power to run their PowerPoint presentation.
Mm.
And it turned out they got the job, and not only did they complete all 50 assignments, but they won an Emmy that year for Best Visual Effects.
Wow. Yeah, but the fun part I liked was where the executive who's left and already agreed to everything, 5 minutes later comes back. This is when they're disassembling things.
Yes, he comes back in. So, you know, I forgot for what purpose, but he'd come back in. And so everybody just like, you know, they're all kind of celebrating that they just pulled this whole thing off. And then all of a sudden he walks back in and everybody just has to immediately, you know,
get back in character.
And move.
Yeah. Powerful, powerful stuff. I mean,
and,
when you put your mind to it.
One of the strong miracle thinking points from that story, because this book is, The Power of Miracle Thinking is filled with stories followed by 3 miracle thinking steps, which are insights or action steps that everyone can use to start creating more miracles in your life. And one of the things that Christina said, a couple of things really have always stuck with me, and she said, whenever I got a no from anyone, I knew I just wasn't talking to the right person. So I hung up and I called somebody else.
Mm.
And sometimes she'd call back the same company and just get a different person. Other times she called a completely different company, but she just knew if she wasn't getting a yes, that she wasn't speaking to the right person.
Mm.
So please, if you feel rejection in any part of your life, you're not speaking to the right person.
Wow. That's...
And even if, you know, when that rejection comes in a relationship, I say, you didn't fail. You've just graduated, baby.
Yeah, graduated. Friends of mine call that a divine upgrade.
Yes, a divine upgrade. You are getting a divine upgrade from the universe. That's right.
Amen. Amen. So let's move over to Suzka, this is her
Suzka.
Quote. Suzka, and this is her quote. Tell your home you love living in it. Your car, how much you appreciate its good running order, and your clothes, how beautiful they make you feel. Suzka.
Yes.
So do you want to talk about her story?
Her story was about wanting to plant tomatoes. She had a father who loved his garden, and he referred to his plants as my babies, and he would talk to them. And he says that they respond. So she decided when she was going to grow a garden, and she planted it in an area of her lawn that had just been filled with weeds for years. And she had never done anything with it. And when she started growing her tomatoes there, there was a neighbor over the fence who was kind of rolling his eyes and finally, you know, said, sorry, nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to grow there. And it turned out her tomatoes were like Jack and the Beanstalk tomatoes. They were so huge and so prolific. And here's this guy with all of his fertilizers and his, you know, doing everything, quote unquote, right. And his tomatoes weren't anywhere near the size of her tomatoes. And he was just, you know, mystified by this whole experience. But she talks about the power of love.
Mm. Yeah, powerful, powerful. Kind of reminds me of what they're doing at Findhorn in Scotland, you know, growing all kinds of large, I mean, ridiculously large vegetables out of mostly sandy soil, because it's very much, I think, near the ocean edge area. And people have come from all around the world to figure out what the heck they're doing, and it's something similar. They're talking to the plant devas. They're, you know, showering love upon these plants, and it's got nothing to do with the soil. It's got to do with the energy that they're receiving. So it's really powerful. And again, it goes back to what we spoke about in the beginning, which is the root of the word miracle, to see, but to see things in a new way, to see things, you know, differently. So another one of the stories in your book, The Power of Miracle Thinking, Randy, that really got me was this one called Dispensing Miracles. And again, let me read the quote. This is by a woman by the name of J.J. Crow. When you face a scary unknown, set strong, clear boundaries as to what you are willing or not willing to accept as part of your experience. So here's this woman, J.J. Crow. She has a history of disastrous relationships, financial upheaval, and health challenges, and she then just discovers a suspicious lump in her breast. After making an appointment with the doctor says she needs a lumpectomy. When that procedure fails to remove all of the malignancy, then recommends radiation and chemotherapy, and JJ says adamantly, no, I'm not putting myself through radiation and chemotherapy. So she decides to, you know, look at her mind, see what kind of negative beliefs might have been creating this. And a year later, she returns to the doctor, finding that the mass has grown much larger. So this time, more than a lumpectomy would be necessary. And then after the surgery is done, the doctor says, well, you really need to have radiation and chemotherapy. And once again, JJ declines. So now we go, it's the morning of Easter Sunday, one of JJ's favorite holidays, and she sits down and, you know, in the pew, and she says, I'd like to converse with my maker. So she doesn't really know what she's supposed to do, but she says, Lord, can you show me a sign of what I'm supposed to do? because I really don't want this radiation and chemotherapy. So as the crowd begins to pour into the church, she takes a seat, and a woman who she did not know sits down next to her. A few minutes later, the woman reaches into her purse and pulls out two objects, one of which she handed to the person on her left, and the other of which she handed to JJ on her right. Each had been given a small Easter egg, shaped rock with a single word on it. JJ's rock was a beautiful shade of pale green. She couldn't help but notice that the purple writing on her rock perfectly matched her dress. The inscription? It simply read, "Miracle." "When I saw that sign, I knew I was going to be okay," says JJ. Every 3 months, she went back to be examined, and a year later, received a letter from her doctor which read, "Congratulations, you are cancer-free." So JJ continues to work with this attitude, starts going to an ashram, incorporates yoga and qigong, along with 45 minutes of walking every day. One day in the ashram, she meets this man who's in great pain, and she says to him, "I think you need a miracle." And she puts the rock in his hand. The man looked like he might be dying and began to steadily improve. Months later, he looked well, and JJ asked him if she might have the rock back, but the man was not willing to part with it. A few years later, however, he felt more secure about his health, and he returned the rock to JJ. What day was it? Easter Sunday. The rock began to find its way into the hands of others who also experienced major turnarounds in their health. Pretty soon, a friend of JJ's said, "You need to dispense more miracle rocks to people." So JJ began collecting rocks from all kinds of sacred sites. Says JJ, who now sports a smile on her face more often than not, "I guess you could call me an MD. I'm a miracle dispenser." Just a small, small way of looking at the world anew. And when we ask for a sign and we get that sign, how many of us say, "Oh, it's just a rock"?
Mm-hmm. And there are signs. Every single day we receive signs. Are we available to see them?
Right.
You know, do we realize that they're a sign?
Well, and also, did we ask for a sign? You know,
mm-hmm.
A lot of people will say, "Oh, you have angels all around you," but do you know that angels can't act on your behalf unless you ask for their help?
You know, one of the things I say is that an angel will never respond to a request for help by saying, or an RSVP by saying, "Sorry, I can't attend." You can ask angels for help, and you can also ask for specific angels for help. And I wanted to share a very funny story with you. Some years ago, and this story is in my first book, my Crappy to Happy book, I was standing in the middle of my living room some years ago, and I just kind of got adamant, and I shouted in my living room, "I call on my collections angels, and I want you to go collect anything that's owed to me from anyone in the universe." And two very interesting things happened that day. Later that day, I got a phone call from a woman who I had done some editing work for her, because, you know, I'm a book editor. I help people with their, you know, edit their books. So I had done some book editing for her, and she hadn't paid me. And everything I had done to collect the money, you know, it was just a wash. I finally realized, you know, I'm never going to get paid. So 2 or 3 years had gone by. Now, here was this woman calling me right after I called on my collections angels, and she said, "Randy, I have the money I owe you, and I put it, I bought a money order. I have a money order, and I put it in your mailbox. I was just too embarrassed to give it to you in person, but, you know, please accept my very belated payment." And so I was kind of startled, and I just kind of looked upwards towards the heavens and said, "Thank you." And I'm thinking, great, it's a money order. That means it can't bounce. And then another woman called me later that evening and said, "You know, Randy, you did some work for me on trade a while ago, and it must have been like a year before, and I never kept my end of the trade, which was to give you a bodywork session, and I just wanted to complete my agreement." Now, I had completely forgotten about that one, but I had asked the angels and the universe to bring to me anything that was owed to me. And so, did I know there was such a thing as collections angels? No, I made it up. Mm-hmm. But then I saw, wait a minute, this really works. So I discovered over the years, and also through my dear friend Peggy Black, who you mentioned earlier in the story, The Heart of Moo, that Peggy has teams, all kinds of teams. She has a financial team to oversee all of her, you know, highest and best financial decisions. She has a logistics team, so whenever she travels, they make sure that everything, and when I'm talking about team, I'm talking about angelic presences. You know, so she has her logistics team to oversee safe, smooth, easy logistics in all of her travel. And you can assign a team, an angelic team, for any purpose that you have.
Wow, that's a nice tip.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, it's really the conversation that you're beginning, that you're breathing as much life and reality into it, is what really helps to create that you're starting to get answers on the other end.
And it's fun to watch those answers as they keep coming in.
Talk about one that maybe really astonished you, can you?
Sure. I just had something just happen just a couple of days ago. I thought about adding grant writing to my list of skills because I'm a very articulate book editor and writer, and I thought, I think I'd like to do some grant writing. So I just had that thought on, I don't know, let's say Wednesday. It was just last week. Thursday, I get a phone call, one of these out-of-the-blue kind of things, from my college roommate from 1976. We've only spoken once in the last, what, 40 years?
Mm-hmm.
1976. And she was calling me for another purpose, but it turns out she's a grant writer. And she says, and I told her, you know, I'm interested in pursuing grant writing, you know, because I think I'd be really good at this. And she said, let me tell you my secrets. And I got out my pen and paper.
Wow.
And I wrote, she gave me so much information. That was pretty astonishing.
Yeah.
And much earlier in our talk, Jeff, I was talking about, well, like when you said the universe will never give you a yes, but. When I said, you know, I'm interested in pursuing grant writing, there was no resistance. There was no but. I was just open to it. And look how quickly that miracle came in.
It's really quite astonishing. And we're actually getting to the end of the show here. But it's really quite astonishing that when we are in alignment and when we say yes with a full, open, wide, able to receive yes, how quickly the universe can act on our behalf in order to fulfill that yes. And I want to thank you, Randy Pizer, for saying yes for this book, The Power of Miracle Thinking, because I think a lot of people's lives have been changed as a result of it. And I think the work you're doing is quite powerful and special. So thanks again for being my guest.
You're very welcome. You know, it's a fun way to live.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. All right. Be well.
Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome. And my guest today on Planetary Spirit has been Randy Pizer, who is the author of several books, but her latest is entitled The Power of Miracle Thinking. And it's a very powerful and wonderful book. And if you want to learn more about that, go to www.miraclethinking.com, miraclethinking.com. And for her other website, go to www.authoronestop.com, AUTHORONESTOP, for finding agents, ghostwriters, publicity, or publishers. And then coming up, my guest will be Danielle Brooks, who is somebody that works with John of God in South America, who heals people astonishingly and miraculously without any medical knowledge whatsoever, performs surgeries and operations and creates healing. And if you're enjoying this program and would like to access past interviews, go to www.planetary-spirit.com for on-demand archives of past shows, where recent interviews are now available on the Planetary Spirit website. And while there, be sure to sign up for the email list to receive monthly updates for who my upcoming guests will be. And so this is Jeff Figranini, host of Planetary Spirit, wishing you all a blessed day.